The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Harvest had begun, as it did every year, in Minden, Pennsylvania. McIntosh and Liberty first, on through Cortland, Empire, Jonagold, and Gala, and now in November, Braeburn. Jack looked out over the forked trunks of the trees extending into branches bent with fruit. Fallen apples littered the frosty ground. Rubbing the back of his neck, he checked his watch, anxious, counting the hours until he'd be able to find some peace with his fists. He'd been at it since the first arc of light to the east shone through the early morning mist lying low in the hills. Before the mist gave way to blue sky, Morrigan Mountain stood steady to the north, accompanied by the constant flow of Silver Creek running beside the orchard. Yet Jack's home, the place of his grandfather and great-grandfather, where he'd lived all his life, felt unfamiliar. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host of New Books in Literature for the New Books Network. And today I'm talking to geologist and environmental scientist Kate Brandis, author of The Promise of Pearson Orchard. Hi, Kate, and thank you for joining me on this New Books Network podcast.
Hi, Galit, and thanks so much for having me.
So let's start with you explaining how you came to write this book while working as a geologist and raising a family.
Sure. I am a scientist by training, and I had no inkling that I wanted to do anything creative until I was about 35 when I had my first son. And for reasons that I really can't explain, even to myself, that birth of my first child was somehow related to my desire to write creatively. I just remember thinking that I wanted to make something that would last. That was a conscious thought I had. I didn't know how to write creatively. I'd worked as a scientist for, 15 years at that point, by my mid-30s. And I was, had a young child. I had another baby 2 years later. And I was working full-time, incredibly busy, as all parents of small kids know. But yet, it was so important to me that I write something and share stories that I fit in somehow, trying to learn and teach myself how to write creatively. So I spent it took me 2 years to write my first short story. At the end of those 2 years, I got it published in a tiny little journal, but that was kind of the start. And following that, I wrote a couple other short stories. And then it took me about 7 years to kind of learn how to write a novel and complete it and get it published. It's now, many years later, I'm in my mid-40s now. And it's a bug that has bitten me, and I've never gone back. Like, I'm love writing. It's definitely a part of my life. It's an important part of my life. I feel like if I wasn't doing it, I would be sacrificing something kind of essential to who I am. But the mystery remains as to exactly why I, began writing in my mid-30s. I can say that I always have loved reading, and I've always related to the world through books and through fiction primarily. I've always loved stories. And in my whole life, whenever I've been talking with people about something or there's been a problem to solve, I'm almost always kind of drawing from some story that I've read. So I guess in that regard, it's not entirely surprising that I kind of came to want to write my own stories.
But how did you come to write this particular book?
This particular book. Okay, well, that's a good question. Well, I think, my background is environmental science. And when I was beginning to write this story, I had a job where what I did was talk to people in my local community about environmental issues that they were concerned with. And when I started writing the book, it was like about 2006, 2007. And the topic of conversation in Pennsylvania, I'm located in eastern Pennsylvania, was fracking, natural gas drilling. And so I was having a lot of conversations about that with people. And the kind of general tenor where I am in Pennsylvania on the east side, where there isn't natural gas underlying our area, was that people were generally against it. They didn't have anything to gain and everything to lose. Meanwhile, I have my family, my grandparents are all from sort of central Pennsylvania, and they've lived there in a rural area for, generations. And they have leased their land for fracking and done so because, in part because they were really, needed the money. And also living in a rural area, it's an area that's previously been mined for coal. And they, I have grandparents who, leased their land for coal mining. So, the culture of mining in that part of Pennsylvania is deep. And, so I understood natural gas drilling and kind of how maybe a rural population in Pennsylvania might think about that a little bit differently than where I was living at the time when I started the book, which is more of an urban area. And so I was really fascinated with the different takes on that topic. And particularly, I was interested in it from kind of this rural view versus a kind of a more urban view, because I was seeing both of those. And I was also, at the time, it was a lot in the papers in the New York Times, and that kind of gives a more urban viewpoint and a more urban viewpoint, I guess. And so I really didn't feel like the rural voice of Pennsylvania was being shared much or heard, or I couldn't really read about it much. And I certainly wasn't talking to anybody about it much except for my own family. So I thought this was interesting. I thought, if I was going to write a book, these are things that I could really explore and in a fictional way and kind of play things out. And I really wanted to, what I found as I was writing the book is that, I wrote the book from four different points of view. And so there is kind of this urban perspective, and certainly several of the characters have a more rural perspective and other things that's going on with them. But I really had to put myself into each of those characters' shoes, and I really wanted to do that. I kind of really wanted to explore the idea of fracking from all of these different viewpoints. It's about fracking, but it's not, I'm a scientist, but I wrote a story. It's a family drama. So it's primarily a family drama, and the fracking kind of serves as a metaphor for what's happening with the family. But it did allow me to kind of go into these different perspectives on that issue and sort of explore them from a very human standpoint.
We're going to get back to questions about fracking, but let's dive into the characters.
Sure.
Can you address the opening passage that I quoted about how Jack is counting the hours until he can find peace with his fists.
Yeah. So Jack was the easiest character for me to write and probably the one I identify most with in the novel. And he has this, you know, issue, I guess. He deals with things by fighting in barns, you know, without mitts. It's just bare fist kind of fighting that he does. And he's really, really angry. And I wanted, you know, I guess that just came to me. I don't know. It came up very naturally. This is kind of a weird thing, but I'll share it with you anyway. When I was writing his character, I started listening to the rapper Eminem, and you know, he really had his heyday like quite a long time ago, and I've never listened to him at all. But I heard a song by him, and then suddenly I was downloading like all of the songs, and I was listening to them when I was by myself in my car. But I was listening to them all the time, and it was because I thought that his voice and a lot of the music were really embodied, at least, you know, not necessarily the way Jack was, but that energy in the music, I thought embodied who Jack was. So that really helped me write that character. And, you know, he's very angry. He doesn't know what to do with his anger. And so this is kind of how it's manifested in his life. You know, he turns to fighting because he doesn't know how to handle his problems. And so that's what he does as kind of an outlet or release.
You also write on that first page that Jack's home, where his grandfather lived and his father, where he'd lived all his life, felt unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, at the beginning of the book, Jack's kind of in this like crisis situation. And in that he loves his wife, Leanne, who's also one of the characters in the book. But she's left him, and it's kind of the lowest of the low point for him, because all he's ever really wanted is to be with her on this orchard where they live. And, but he's kind of sabotaged the relationship in some ways, because he just can't handle himself. And, you know, Leanne kind of leaves him in part because of this fighting situation that he's sort of addicted to. He doesn't recognize the place he is because it's not what his dream of it was ever. You know, his wife's now left him. Here he is on this orchard, but without her. And so it seems totally foreign.
And then can you talk about the connection between their estrangement and the apple orchard business?
Sure. Yeah. So the orchard in the story is Jack's family's orchard, and his father dies tragically when Jack is young. And so he gets the orchard when he's, you know, like 17 years old and has to kind of figure out the business for himself and make his way. And along the way, he marries Leanne, and together they work on the orchard. And she really takes a liking to, she really becomes very involved with growing apples, and she loves the business of it, of growing them and kind of understanding them. And she starts to get very interested in trying to grow apples in this like more organic way. He's, you know, more of a traditional orchardist in that he applies, you know, the usual round of pesticides and things like that. And she's trying to kind of get away from that and kind of make this sort of niche business where she can grow these more organic apples. And so when she ends up, you know, leaves him, which is the story opens, and she's moved out, she still has stake in the orchard and still very much wants to be there and be working on her piece of it, you know, this organic piece. So he must kind of work with her side by side, even though they aren't living in the same house together anymore.
And why is she so confused?
Well, I think, you know, she married Jack and things seemed good. In the story, they are having fertility issues. And so she's not able to conceive. And It's kind of what drives a wedge between them. They try for a lot of years. Jack thinks it's his fault. He kind of gives up. This is in some ways what drives him to the fighting, because he's kind of beating himself up in some ways. He holds himself responsible. And he kind of gives up on her just mostly because he's so overwhelmed with feeling like he's failed her, and not being able to, you know, they can't have a family. He feels like it's his fault. So he kind of gives up, and then she realizes that he's given up and that she doesn't really have another choice but to leave him if she wants to. She feels like that's the only road to her, to happiness for her, if she kind of parts ways with him and they go their separate roads.
Mm-hmm. And then the third voice in the book is Wade, Jack's estranged brother, who shows up in the first few pages. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about him.
Yeah, sure. So Wade works for a company called Green Energy. And in the story, we find out that Wade has been gone from the town of Minden, rural Pennsylvania. Minden is where the story takes place. He's been gone for many, many years. He left, you know, after an accident when he was very young, the same timing when Jack had to take over the farm, the orchard. And so he's been living away. He hasn't been in contact. He's very estranged from Jack and from Leanne. And then he shows up with this new job, and he's working for Green Energy. And he shows up at the orchard and tells Jack, and Leanne is also there working, that he wants to buy the gas rights for the orchard. And so that's kind of how the story begins. And Wade is, you know, like Jack, he's a damaged soul, and he's trying to kind of come back to Minden, where he left feeling ashamed of something that he did. He's trying to come back and kind of start over. And he feels like by offering gas leases, he can help people there. He can, you know, the town is poor. They're struggling, and he feels like he has something to offer them. So that's his character in the beginning.
You talked about your grandparents having these issues, but have you witnessed instances of companies using town insiders like Wade to sell their land rights and also promising that the town folks will be able to go back to regular life after the company is finished? Have you seen that happening in real life?
I have not seen that personally in real life, no. And I think generally, people who buy gas rights in, at least in Pennsylvania, are, you know, working for companies that come in. They're not working with local people, as far as I know.
I really like that this isn't a one-sided story that vilifies the industry, the gas industry. You made it clear that it's really complicated. But now, just between us, can you talk about landowners who sell their mineral rights, talk about the fracking industry, and the balance that rural landowners are trying to achieve between saving the land and surviving?
Well, I think it's so complicated. And I'm glad you thought that the story is, shares a lot, you know, different sides well. That was my intent. It is complicated. And I think it depends on who you are and where you live. Certainly, it's a fact that, fracking in some parts of Pennsylvania, especially early on when fracking first began, there was associated water contamination. There's been a lot of fracking where that hasn't gone on, but it has changed the landscape in the areas where it's really intensive. There are a lot more roads, there are more wells, that sort of thing. There's also more money in those areas. It's complicated. There are pluses and minuses on both sides, and I'm interested in the gray areas of everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested. So, you know, this is what brought me to the story in large part, is there are so many gray areas here, and I'm always wanting to explore those. I don't, you know, as an environmental scientist, somebody who's been working in the field for now 25 years, I don't think there's anything black and white. It is all complicated and all has, you know, nuances that I think we're all better off if we kind of explore and really understand, rather than just, you know, talking on one side or the other.
Mm-hmm. So Leanne's parents are among the earliest to sign up with green energy. Well, with Wade, yeah, for green energy. So let's discuss how that turns out.
Sure. So Leanne's parents have a dairy farm that's adjacent to the orchard, and they kind of, Wade and Jack and Leanne all grew up together because they were right across from each other. And in the story, when Wade comes back to sell the gas leases, or to buy the gas leases, I'm sorry, he goes to them and asks, and it turns out that Leanne's mom is very ill, and they're very behind on a lot of bills. So they're particularly in a desperate situation. And so they agree to this deal, and it turns out their property is one of the first to be fracked. So there's, you know, there's a scene where there are bulldozers, you know, in very close to their front yard, and there's a lot of dust, and it's much, you know, I think the scene is told from Wade's perspective. So he's standing there looking at, you know, this farm that he, you know, knew as a child, and it's being transformed in a way that he was really not expecting. He does want to help Leanne's parents, but it's also a little bit unnerving what's happening. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that Leanne's dad is kind of, you know, by the time everything's said and done, he's not happy with the way things go. And it's sort of a turning point for Wade. He came in sort of wanting to help. This particular fracking job did not go well, and it kind of starts to turn him from feeling like he's helping to feeling like he's not helping.
Yeah, and now this is where Jack decides to go to Stella, who's the fourth character, the fourth voice in the book.
That's right. Yeah.
And she's an interesting character, along with her long-suffering husband. So is she based on somebody in particular? How, tell us about her.
So she's not necessarily based on anyone, but she's unusual in that she, is the mother of Jack and Wade, and she had them in Minden. They were born on the orchard, at the orchard. And, but she was very unhappy living there, and knew she was in the wrong marriage. Also knew that particularly Jack loved living at the orchard, even from a, you know, from a young age, she could tell that taking him away would be hard for him. And so she just feels like she's in the wrong life. And so she ends up leaving her two little boys at the time, you know, they're 4 and 5, and she leaves them, and she goes and starts a new life, and she doesn't look back. And so in that way, you know, she's an unusual character, because there aren't, I think, a whole lot of moms out there that would feel like they could do that, but that's the choice that she makes. And so, you know, Jack does know that she's become an environmental lawyer, and he's, you know, unsure of what Wade's intentions are, his brother's intentions exactly. And so he reaches out to Stella, who he has not been in contact with all of these years, but he reaches out to her kind of because she's at least another voice besides green energy that he's inviting to Minden to just try to open up the conversation. But it's that dynamic is quite, you know, difficult for everybody. You know, here she is, the mother who left, coming back. Of course, Wade's got all kinds of issues with this. Jack's got his own problems. And so, yeah, it's an interesting piece. I just as an aside, when I was writing the book early on, you know, it took me, as I said, I think 7 years, you know, maybe in year two, I went to a writing workshop once and the instructor said, okay, there's two things that you should never do when you're writing a book. And one is to make a character a mother character who leaves her children. and the other is never write about a farm. And I was writing, you know, both of those things were true. And somehow I just felt that I was on the right track. I mean, it was still so early in the process, but I felt strongly about those two parts that I did really want them in the story. You know, again, it's those, particularly with the mother, you know, with Stella's character, the gray areas and, you know, the complications of being a mother and those sorts of things.
She was not all that sympathetic in the beginning.
No.
She grew on me.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the importance of boundaries in this book, referring both to the land and to relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a theme in the book. There are all of the characters, I'd say all of the four that we've talked about have issues with boundaries and where to draw a line. And there, you know, there are, you know, I guess inherently, because the book is so much about the land and how each of these characters sees the land and what land they have. And, you know, boundaries are inherent in the storyline of the land itself, which I kind of see the land as its own character in this book, because it's so fundamental to kind of defining how each of the characters, really, each of the characters is so different in how they react to the orchard itself.
Wow. So you were thinking the land was a character. I was going to ask you about the idea that the town feels like a character, Minden, one that's viewed, and it's a character that's viewed differently by each of the other characters. But I think you can interchange the word Minden for land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. And that's totally true. They, you know, the way they see the land is definitely, you know, Minden is part of that as well, for sure.
So then you have a lawyer, the town lawyer. Why can't he do what Stella is doing to fight green energy when it becomes clear that they're not doing what they promised?
Sure. So there is, well, part of it is that he's really, the whole thing is that he's the mayor of the town. So he has to be kind of objective. And he also does not have her expertise. Stella has specialized in environmental law, so she's very well versed in the rights of, you know, the water rights and all of these things. But Elzer, the mayor in the book, he is trying to do what's best for Minden and all of the town people there. And of course, that's quite complicated because everybody, you know, what's best for the town, what's best for the people. It's just hard. It's our decision, and he has to sort of remain objective.
So I could keep talking about this book. It is so rich and there's so much to discuss, but I think we should just let people read it on their own. And I've already taken enough of your time. So could you please answer the traditional new books question? What's next for you?
Oh, sure. Thanks for asking. Well, I am writing another book that is another family drama. It does have another environmental theme to it. I guess I'm going to do that because that's kind of my background and I'm so interested in that. But it's a completely different book, different characters. It is, again, set in rural Pennsylvania. However, I really love the rural character of towns and, you know, that I love nature. And so that comes through. It is right now untitled, but I'm getting hopefully close in the next 6 months to finishing it. But it has to do with complicated family and dams in this case, rather than fracking. Mm. So that's what I'm working on.
Sounds interesting. Thank you so much. Thank you for letting me interview you today, Kate, and happy writing.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It was really wonderful to talk to you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And thank you for listening to this podcast from the New Books Network. Once again, I'm G.P. Gottlieb, host of New Books in Literature, and today I've been talking with Kate Brandis about her novel, The Promise of Pearson Orchard. join the New Books Network and learn both about my upcoming podcasts and those of other hosts in a variety of categories. Goodbye until my next conversation for the New Books Network.